Galapa Bay Salmon Management Policy C-3622. It is a briefing on the agenda. It asks us to note that public input will be taken at the April committee meeting, so this is a briefing only. Whoever is doing it, feel free.
Thank you, Vice Chair Baker, Chair Carpenter, and Commissioners. My name is Chad Herring. I'm the South Coast Fishery Policy Lead, and I am here today to talk about Willapa Bay salmon management and the policy comprehensive review that we're in the process of undergoing. So just to refresh everyone's memory, originally this presentation was scheduled for the February 9th commission meeting that was canceled due to inclement weather. We're here doing it today. We will be taking public comment and going back in front of the commission in April to kind of go back through some of this material that I'm going to go to today, for the commission to be able to hear some public input and comment around fisheries management planning for 2019 North of Falcon process. Moving to slide two in my presentation outline for today, what I have structured this presentation to answer are some questions that were raised by the commission during the January commission meeting, specifically in the future meetings planning discussion. Those questions were, what was the basis for the 14% impact rate cap for wild Chinook? Basically, where are we now in terms of the process of the comprehensive review and implementation and performance of the policy? And I will provide a proposed revised timeline for the completion of the comprehensive review. I have also kind of added why was a policy needed to that, because I think it kind of sets the stage and background for the basis of the 14% impact rate cap to wild Chinook. So, moving on to slide three, why was a Willapa Bay salmon management policy needed? Well, we had some key stocks that were not meeting their escapement objectives or criteria or metrics under the hatchery reform policy. So a policy was needed to enhance the conservation focus of fishery management activity in Willapa Bay. Another issue that was raised is there was a lot of frustration in the harvest allocation. Department staff were hearing it, and I'm sure the commissioners were hearing it at the time, too, about the harvest being more unfairly skewed towards the commercial sector in their mind. So we needed a policy to provide some guidance on reducing gear conflict and the sharing of impacts. And then the last was this lack of trust in the salmon management of Willapa Bay. And so a policy, some guidance was needed to help get us onto the path of restoring and maintaining that public trust around salmon management activities in Willapa Bay. So you'll see on slide four, I have a graph there of Willapa Bay wild Chinook spawner escapement from 1980 to the 2014 timeframe in relation to the escapement goal, which is represented by the black line there. That number is 4,353. During that time series, Chinook had only met the escapement goal 5 out of those 35 years, or 14% of the time. It's also important to note here that you see a few years there in the late 80s where we kind of consistently met the goal. That was really a period of high ocean productivity, and salmon stocks throughout the Pacific Northwest were really flourishing during this time frame. This time frame also corresponds with a high number of southern resident killer whales that were in terms of their abundance during that time frame. So if I was to, just in sake of time, I didn't provide all those graphs, but if I was to show those graphs during the same time frame for chum and coho, you would see that chum would only meet the goal 34% 90% of the time during that 35-year time series, with Coho pretty much consistently meeting that objective 88% of the time during that time series. So moving on to slide five, as a precursor to the current policy, Nacelle River Chinook was identified as the primary population designation for Willoughby Bay Chinook. The graph there, the green bars are hatchery origin spawners, and the blue line is the natural origin spawners, with the red line being the escapement goal for the Nacelle basin itself. So a piece of the overall Willoughby Bay escapement goal, and you can see those green bars are much, much higher than the blue line, and in all years would exceed the 30% PHAWS criteria around that primary population designation. And really, the reason behind that is a lack of infrastructure, and I won't say a complete lack of all infrastructure. It's really a complete lack of adequate infrastructure at the hatchery facility, as well as there are some spawning habitat available below the hatchery itself before you get to the rack as well. So, and a lot of these slides that I've got here over the first couple of pages here have been basically recycled and refurbished from policy development. So they are slides that have been presented to the advisory group, were developed during policy development and included in some presentations to the commission. So moving on to slide six, kind of a delving into a little bit deeper of why we needed to clarify the sharing of impacts and reduce gear conflict. I have a graph here of the Willoughby Bay Chinook total landed harvest by fishery sector. It's important to note that this is not Willoughby Bay Chinook, it's total Chinook. As we've talked about in previous briefings, not all the Chinook that we encounter in Willoughby Bay, either in commercial or recreational fisheries, are really belong there, are local stock. Some of those are out of basin stock. So this graph is just meant to represent total landed Chinook harvest in the bay, not of Willoughby origin fish. So the commercial harvest is represented by the blue portion of the bars, with marine rec represented by the orange, and recreational freshwater harvest represented by the gray color on the bars. As you can kind of see from the graph, commercial harvest has dominated the allocation throughout this time series, but we do have in recent years, beginning in the early 2000s, with this recreational harvest expanding, the allocation to the commercial sector just from 2000 to 2014 averages 69% of the total Chinook harvest going to the commercial sector. Moving on to slide seven, I have a similar graph there, same legend schema, as it were, for Coho landed harvest. Once again, same sort of paradigm. These are not just local Coho, it's total Coho landed in fisheries in Willoughby Bay, not just a Willoughby origin fish. Once again, commercials, high allocation in terms of the proportion of the total harvest, with you see some expansion in recent years for the rec fishery. Overall, from 1980 to 2014, the total commercial portion of the harvest allocation would be 88% going to the commercial sector. So I think this kind of sets the stage a little bit for the basis of the 14% and how that kind of came about. So moving on to slide eight, I'll delve in a little more about the basis of the 14% impact rate cap to Chinook. So the very first meeting that we had during policy development was a public workshop that was held down in Raymond on a Saturday. It was pretty well attended. Conservationists, recreational fishers, local landowners, commercial stakeholders, all in attendance. We had a lot of fish program staff there, some policy staff, some technical, regional staff, and some hatchery staff were there to answer questions. We provided a lot of information to the public, and one of the things that we wanted as an agency to get out of that meeting was we handed out a straw dog questionnaire, and it was focused on Chinook, Coho, and Chum. It asked the same two questions for all of those three species, those questions being which river should be managed for natural production and how rapidly should we meet the objectives. So given some of the history that we just discussed earlier, it wasn't a big surprise that a majority of the respondents to that wanted us to recover Chinook in a relatively quick time frame. 18 of the 27 respondents identified equal to or less than 20 years that they would like us to be meeting our objectives. It is important to note that not everybody who attended the workshop did fill out the questionnaire. We had more people than that, but these are just the responses that we got back. So the department looked really closely at that and what the public wanted in terms of a rebuilding time frame. So the next step then was to develop a tool that we could use to evaluate that and look at different fishery management paradigms across time to see if we could meet some of those objectives. The tool that was selected for that was the All-Age Analyzer, or the sometimes referred to as the AHA model. It was an AHA model was specifically built for this purpose for Willapa Bay by the HSRG. It's an integrated analysis of hatcheries, harvest, and habitat. It also incorporates some variability in the ocean survival and management uncertainty. What's important to note is it cannot predict future environmental conditions. So the model really looks to the past and the cycles of the past to inform about what may happen in the future. So actual results will be different if the pattern doesn't hold, right? Adaptive management would be necessary to continue to reevaluate where we are in terms of our management objectives and really be able to see what the actual results are versus what was predicted. So moving on to slide 10, these three graphs here are summarized output from the AHA model runs. These graphs were presented to the ad hoc Willapa Bay Advisory Group during policy development and were included in presentations given to the commission during policy development. These graphs are generated by, so there is some randomness to the AHA model. So in order to kind of average that out across the we would do a bunch of model runs, a bunch of iterations, 50 specific iterations at each of the different kind of harvest rates, and you can see those along the bottom axis of each one of the graphs, and use the model to predict what the expected escapement would be kind of binned out in three different time series. So the blue bars would represent that specific harvest rate and what it would mean to estimated escapement in the 10 to 15 year range. The red bars for 16 to 21 years, and the green bars for 22 to 27 years. And as you can see from all three graphs, under a 15% harvest rate in the 16 to 21 year time frame, so the red bars, Willapa and Nacelle would meet the objective in terms of reaching escapement levels, and the North River would just be just a little short of 15%. It was actually 14% that satisfied that for North River. So that's kind of the basis of where the 14% came from. It came out of the multiple iterative runs of the AHA analysis in relation to the desire to reach those escapement goals in a what I would call an aggressive time frame. So with that, it's important to note, once again, moving on to slide 11, that there is a lot of uncertainty in the predictions of the AHA model. Now, this graph was also developed during policy development. It is this is the Nacelle River wild Chinook population, and what we did to generate this graph is set the model for optimum or good ocean conditions through the years 1 through 21, and then set the model for very poor ocean conditions from year 1 through 21. And you can see there from the graph that depending on conditions in the ocean, results can be very different regardless of whatever harvest rate we use in Willapa Bay. These were all modeled as at a 14% harvest rate with the expected escapement there generated in the graph. So there is definitely some uncertainty in the predictions of the AHA model. So where are we now? I'm just reading what's on slide 12, and I'll be moving right into slide 13. From an implementation, performance, and a comprehensive, and where we are now with the comprehensive review in regards to stock assessment, what we've implemented. We've acquired some funding. We've got increased spawning ground coverage. We've added six weekly index survey reaches to our Chinook stock assessment program. We've added 16 reaches to the Coho program to increase our coverage of the bay in total. We're still not covering a huge area even with these increases. Prior to these increases in our weekly index surveys, we were covering 5% of the total coho habitat. These increases now allow us to get to 8% of the total coho habitat. So there is still a lot of uncertainty, and understanding the precision in our stock assessment program is still an important piece that we're currently working on. For CHUM, historically, when CHUM stock assessment program was developed in Willapa Bay in the late 60s, there was a suite of 10 indexes that were done. Those indexes were done yearly through the mid-1990s. Due to some funding constraints, the agency regional staff looked at a relationship between some of the what they felt was the key CHUM indexes to the full suite of 10, and then expanding that to the total basin spawner escapement. And that's how we got to just doing three indexes in Willapa Bay. As that process was developed, part of the recommendation to that methodology was that we would review or redo the 10 indexes every 5 to 6 years to inform that regression model and make sure that those relationships were still holding. The last time we were able to do the full suite in Willapa Bay was 2004. So in 2018, we collected the data. We did all 10 indexes through the entirety of the CHUM spawn timing. So in terms of the comprehensive review, what we're working on for Chinook, we're working on a stock recruit analysis for Chinook. It is complicated by the limited number of complete brood years that we have with Chinook being mass marked in Willapa Bay. Just to remind the commission that mass marking for Chinook didn't begin in Willapa Bay until the 2006 brood year. We're really looking at returns beginning in the 2010 brood year. So we really only have a couple of brood years of complete data that we can use to inform that analysis. So that's presented some challenges. We're working through that. We hope to have that analysis completed this summer. For Coho, the stock recruit analysis is done and has been completed, and that work was done by Dr. Cope in 2016, and it has been implemented at both the PFMC and in terms of our state metrics. For CHUM, as I mentioned, we're working on evaluating the escapement estimate. after we complete the Chinook stock recruit analysis to a stock recruit analysis of Chum. Hopefully we will be able to complete that analysis prior to completion of the comprehensive review dates that I'll talk about a little bit farther in my presentation. Just in terms of performance of the policy, looking to the graph on the top right-hand corner of slide 13, this just basically shows the performance of the policy in relation to its escapement objective from 15, 16, 17, and 18. Please keep in mind the 18 data is very preliminary. We're just wrapping up some of those surveys, so very, very preliminary information there, but wanted to make sure that you had as much as you could in way of information going into this process. So as you can see there that And I have a small table below that that looks at the average percent of goal prior to the policy and since policy implementation. While in no years since policy implementation have we reached the escapement goal for Chinook, their really average abundance prior to the policy hasn't changed much. 56% in terms of relation to the goal prior to policy development and 53 cents. So not a real big change there. What we have seen is a huge change in coho, the abundance of coho. This is not obviously symptomatic to just Willapa Bay. This has been a statewide issue for coho during these brood years and I think is pretty well reflected in that in the table there where prior to policy we had 240% of goal on average down to just 95% of goal through the years of policy implementation, and really that number is really driven a little high by 2016 where we were about 180% of the goal, but we've been much lower than that in the other years of the policy. A little bit of good news is it appears that some of the chum conservation actions that were put in place first at the 2010 draft management plan and then in the current policy has been successful in increasing the abundance of chum, at least in the last 4 years. So moving on to slide 14, I'm sorry, in terms of fisheries management, what we've implemented in terms of fishery management has really been all about increasing the onboard sample rate. I have a table in the top right that would show prior to policy implementation, so prior to 2015, we would our onboard observer program would sample about 2% of the total landed effort of the commercial fishery throughout the entirety of the season. And we have increased that through policy development. The onboard observation program is important as a tool to estimate the impacts of that marked selective fishery for Chinook. It is also an important tool for us to collect genetic information on the stock composition of those unmarked impacts that we are encountering in that fishery. From 2015 to 2018, we have collected 551 genetic samples that we use to assess stock composition. So as we, as I had a slide earlier that looked at catch allocation of Chinook and coho previous to the policy, I have some catch allocation from 2015 and 2017. I don't have complete catch information for 2018, so that's why that's not included. But on average across those brood years, the commercial allocation of the total Chinook harvest is at 27% and 51% for coho. In terms of the performance of the commercial fishery, I've got a small table there on the bottom right-hand corner of the slide. You can see from 2000 to 2014, individual fishers in the fishery, about 78 participants, and that number has been decreasing over time. In 2018, we're about 50% of that. So we've lost about half of the fleet during that time frame. You can also see Chinook catch is close to 9,000 fish in those 14, 15 years prior to the policy, and that number has come down dramatically as we have implemented the policy, and you can really see that kind of coho crash reflected there. In that table, as we have really focused the commercial fishery on coho, but still those catches have been dramatically reduced in comparison to prior to implementation of the current policy. So moving on to recreational fisheries and what we've implemented there, we focused mostly in the marine area and impacts and catch associated with the recreational marine area fishery. From 2015 to 2017, we have had active in-season monitoring during the Chinook management time frame in Willapa Bay, with the primary goals of that program to be collecting encounter information and also coded wire tags of harvested hatchery fish, just to increase our understanding of what that fish is impacting, what that fishery is impacting. In 2018, we went to a full-blown creel for the Marine Area 2-1 there in Willapa Bay, using a modified Murphy method brought over from Puget Sound. This estimate, we basically started the minute the fishery opened on July 1, and we ran through September 30 with that estimate. So we do have estimates of encounters and impacts to unmarked Chinook in that marine wreck fishery, as well as harvest of Chinook during that time frame. Important to note that 97% of the harvest that occurs in the wreck area, in the marine area for Chinook, occurs in that July, August, and September time frame, with only 3% occurring after. A little bit different story for coho, but for the time that we were out there doing this monitoring program, we did produce an estimate of coho harvest and impacts as well, but it is not a complete estimate, as some catch would happen after that program had finished. And so just a note there about freshwater fisheries. Our freshwater fisheries monitoring is still all done by catch record card. So in terms of the performance of the recreational fishery, same kind of paradigm as the table there for the commercial fishery. Average landed catch in the marine area and the freshwater from the 15 years prior to the implementation of the policy, and what has happened since. So only have numbers for Chinook in the marine area for marine area 2-1 for 18, but you can see in terms of Chinook, both the catch in the marine area and the freshwater has increased dramatically, and we have also seen increases in the number of coho that they are harvesting as well as a result of some of the policy implementation. So moving to slide 16, just to kind of sum up, where are we now in terms of the comprehensive review? So it's just important to keep in mind that this presentation was originally scheduled to be done in February, earlier in February, so some of these things were a little farther along than I initially would have been on February 9th as I sit here today. But we are working on incorporating all these new monitoring programs and new data sources into our management tools to update those tools and just refine them. It is a significant amount of work to incorporate that into a long history, a long historical data set, and making sure that that's done accurately and precisely. We do, at this point in time, have finalized 2017 run reconstructions. So all the numbers that you're seeing here today from 2017 back are finalized numbers. 2018 are still preliminaries. We are developing preliminary run reconstructions geared towards forecasting in the upcoming North of Falcon process for 2019. A few items that we still have outstanding that we need to kind of wrap up run reconstructions for 2018 are the genetic analyses that we've collected. We'll get those back. back in the next month or two. The CWTs that we've collected, those need to be pulled out of the heads, read, inputted into the database, and expanded. And that will happen over the summertime. And then we're still waiting that the catch record card data from freshwater fisheries. We're currently working on a stock recruit analysis for Chinook, talked a little bit about the challenges with that earlier on, and we are working on the escapement estimate methodology review for Chinook Chum. It's also, just want to note here that methodologies for Chum stock assessment for Grace Harbor and Willow Bay, while not exactly the same, are similar. They utilize a similar methodology. 2019 will be year four of a five-year review of the Chum escapement methodology in Grays Harbor. So we're also really looking to what folks are finding out with that program to help inform us as to what may be a better method, or whether we've got the best tool we possibly can have in terms of estimating the number of chum on the spawning ground. So moving to my last slide there, number 17, what we're proposing, you can see in red with the Fish and Wildlife Commission meeting today, briefing on progress to date. That's where we are and what we're doing right now today. What we're proposing moving forward would be to meet with the advisory group and Fish Committee in August to provide an update on where we are in terms of the comprehensive review, the progress that we have to date, and to release any information that we would have completed at that time, and then to come back to the full commission in November of 2019 with a summary presentation and to seek approval of the final report. This is still a little bit of an aggressive time frame. It may take, you know, we're still waiting on a few sources of information that I identified earlier, and getting those sources of information will bump right up against that timeline. So just want to let folks know that this still is kind of an aggressive timeline, even to wrap this up by November, given the level of staffing and some of those data necessary data that are still outstanding. So with that, I will answer any questions or concerns commissioners may have at this time.
My goodness.
Vice Chair Baker.
Yes, go ahead.
Chad, this is Larry Carpenter. I don't have any questions. I'm going to review this and perhaps I'll have some later. I just want to compliment you on a job well done in that briefing. I'm sorry because of the inclement weather that we couldn't do it face-to-face. It would have been that much better, I think, but what you just did was superb, and thank you for that.
Commissioner Thorburn?
Go ahead, Commissioner Thorburn.
Thanks, Chad, as usual, outstanding. Couple of questions, starting with slide five, where you show prior to the policy information about PHAS. I realize the policy really focuses on escapement, but how are we doing with PHAS since the implementation of the policy, or is that a concern?
Yeah, it is. Thank you for the question, Commissioner Thornburn. I would say it is still a concern. I don't really report much here on Willapa River, which in the policy is the primary has the primary population designation, because it was really about the that reduction in hatchery production that was meant to hit for us to be able to hit those PHAS objectives. For the nacelle, We've been doing better. It's incremental. So Nacelle River Chinook, with the current policy, has a contributing designation. It still has the same PHAS criteria in terms of equal to or less than 30%.
Okay.
PHAS, or a proportion of hatchery origin spawners in the system. 15 and 16, 15 we didn't do so well. I would say it's pretty was pretty stable with regards to values prior to implementation of the policy. Hatchery staff, regional staff really started tinkering with the weir and the attraction channel and some of that stuff in 2016. We saw a little improvement in the PHAS in 2016. We saw we actually hit the value for the first time ever in 2017. Preliminary information from 2018 would show that we didn't hit it, although it is an improvement over previous levels. Now, whether the extreme low flow conditions that we had during the Chinook run timing really led to that, and there might have been nothing we could have done to resolve that issue, only time will tell. But we have had some incremental progress. I would say that with the infrastructure we have at Nacelle, it's always going to be hit or miss. In good years, we're going to probably do a pretty good job and may even hit that 30%. But in some years, we still have a removable picket weir that isn't a concrete sill, that isn't a real solid structure, a lot of freshets, and we could be have numbers right back to where we were pre-implementation. So it's not I know that's not quite a cut and dry answer as we would like, but it's a difficult situation.
Okay, thank you for that. And I have a second question on the next slide, six. You really take a look at 2000 to 2014. What was going on before 2000 that harvest was so much higher? Was that related to higher hatchery production?
Commissioner Thorburn, this is Ron Warren. Prior to 2000, very dominated by hatchery system. We didn't have any way to identify hatchery origin fish. Much different structure to the fishery relative to when commercial fisheries were occurring. They were occurring early in August through the tail end of August. Really had some target values after the or on the Chinook populations there because of our lack of ability to identify hatchery versus wild. It was also when you looked at the harvest rate, total harvest rate, we were in the 70% of the population through all fisheries from Alaska back to stream of origin. So it was the starting of after the 99 complete shutdown in the early 2000s, we started modifying and bringing the harvest rates down to match up with the conservation values of the agency and the fishery.
Thank you.
I would like to add that in your previous question about PHAS, through our capital budget, we are evaluating and developing a new facility design for Nacelle. That we are contemplating a concrete sealed weir that will give us some additional efficiencies in trapping and diverting fish into the facility. So that will also help our PHAS rates that we need to meet.
Great. Thank you. Sounds like it's kind of a challenging river.
All rivers are when Mother Nature wants to take you.
I guess that's true.
Okay, so this is Commissioner Baker. We are, as usual, frustratingly trying to absorb a huge amount of information in a short amount of time, and an even shorter amount of time for us to comment on these presentations. I've had a note from Tammy that we can go past 10 a little bit, but not very long. So this, if the meeting goes dark, what happens is we got shut off. On that, I'd like to note that this issue will be raised again in April. There will be public comment, and I assume with that public comment, we will also have a chance to ask further questions. So unless there's anything burning right now, I'd like to skip meeting minute approval. We can do that next week and go to general discussion. But I don't want to cut it off completely if somebody has you know, an important question for Chad, and also I want to echo our appreciation for the immense amount of work that this is. So is there anything else we need to know now? Okay, go ahead, Commissioner McIsaac.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. No questions for Chad, just a question maybe for Ron or for anybody as to what we should expect in April as a commission policy decision chore after public comment. So I presume it is that we would have the decision to make on whether to stay the course with the current policy for 2019 or to roll over the guidance from 2018 or to come up with some new guidance, and then also to comment on the comprehensive review. Is that what we should expect as our challenge in April?
Commissioner McIsaac, thanks for the question. Short answer, yes. We may not get very far into any of the additional performance work due to the public process and the intense work that we'll have to do between now and then. But then to give all commissioners an idea of what we intend to do through the first portion of North Falcon, to give our constituents a fair look at what the possible alternatives the commission may consider, is that we will run two models, one being full implementation of the policy as written, a second being the rollover of guidance that was given last year. Meeting in between that shouldn't take long if there has been full conversation and discussion about different fishery proposals, and we already have a meeting scheduled for the Tuesday after this comes before the commission to finalize our North Falcon package. So if the commission decides to take action, give us guidance on what to do, we have a final meeting that is scheduled, and we'll be able to finalize Willapa within the time frame of the North Falcon process.
This is Commissioner Graybill.
Go ahead, Dave.
Would it be of value to have the Fish Committee address this and to make recommendation to the commission about a path forward, if we could have a meeting in March when we're in Spokane, just to clarify the challenges that Commissioner McIsaac detailed there? What do we need to accomplish to satisfy our obligations to constituents for in consideration of North of Falcon comes up in April?
Commissioner Graybill, this is Ron. Sir, I will say that that's going to be difficult for us to staff unless you do it after the commission meeting on Saturday. North of Falcon on the 27th is a full forecast meeting with our public. The 26th, the day before that, is a coastal meeting for forecasts. The 28th is a full day of co-manager forecasts and issue development. I plan on traveling to the commission meeting that night, so I'm there for the weekend, but staff truly don't have the time to fly or drive to Spokane to fully staff a Fish Committee meeting. I was hoping that Chad just reminds me that the starting on the 6th is the Pacific Fishery Management Council meeting down in Vancouver that we'll be attending. So there's a lot going on in a very short period of time. We may be able to offer some kind of conference call between now and when we really get going. We could do that from almost any location by offering an hour. We could participate from Vancouver if need be, but to try to staff a fish committee in Spokane is very, very difficult.
Well, this is Vice Chair Baker. This is Commissioner Crabtree. And also to mention, we do not have a fish committee scheduled for Spokane for those reasons that Ron mentioned. So we'll have to take that up in another way at a later date.
Okay. That answered my question. Thanks.
Okay. So anything further on Willapa?